This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. We are definitely in summer. So I'm going to turn on the air conditioning here because it still works. If my air conditioner would quit working now, I'm getting to be such a wuss, I'd have to go charge it up again. You know, there was a time. I wasn't such a wish that if it wasn't working, I'd just stick it out in the heat. Anyways, it is episode 384. I actually just popped open my notes because I had prepared notes last week, and then I just decided that I was going to go off on a wild tear. And for last week's episode, and so for this week's episode, I thought, I've already got my notes done. And then I didn't even look at my notes last night. But I remember enough. It was good. It was Elizabeth Gilbert. She's good. She's fascinating to listen to. We'll talk about that in a moment. It's been an interesting week. Have gotten some good stuff done this week as far as my major client goes. So that's good. Made some progress. I'm in the slog of figuring some things out. And sometimes that takes a little while because you have to account for all the different conditions and you have to sort of mentally imagine based on the things they've already asked for, what might they be asking for in the future. Etc. So it's pretty interesting, but I think I'm finally underway. I was struggling a little bit with how to address the needs. The official term, I call that designing for the present complexity. So how to design for the present complexity. Because if you don't do that, if you don't design for the present complexity, you are ignoring the fact that the present complexity didn't get to us by accident, that there were reasons that things became complex in the type of processes and procedures that are in place. If you don't respect that, then what happens is you design this elegant, simple system, and then all of a sudden people start wanting to do a lot of things that you can't do. And then they end up having workarounds, and then those workarounds make twice as much work for the poor people who are trying to use the simple, elegant system because there's all these exceptions. So we have to design for the present complexity. And in this case, I was looking at it and struggling a little bit, but then I decided that basically there was some complexity that just needed to be made more complex. So I'm actually building a whole new little subsystem on top of what I had already done. And so now, in terms of editability and defaults and rules and policies, now there's also going to be conditions on top of all that. But that's okay. They need it, and it serves a purpose, and it's justifiable. So that's good. Writing has been a little sluggish this week. There's been a few things going on at the same time, and it's really kind of robbed me of some time. I knew this week was going to be a little bit rough, and so at the end of last week, I put on a little bit of a push and actually got down 1,500 more words than I needed to. Then on Sunday, my daughter and son-in-law had a church social event at their house, and we were on schedule for that, so we went down and helped out with that. And that, you know, took a whole bunch, multiple hours on Sunday, where I would normally spend that time writing. It was from about 4:30, because I got there early to help, to 9-ish, 9:15-ish or so. So there was about 4.5 hours there that I lost, which is about 2,000 words or so. And then Monday night, since our floors in the basement were finally taken care of, I started moving furniture back in there, started up with that, and that chewed away some time. And then Tuesday, seems like maybe, I can't remember, there was something that kind of chewed some time away on Tuesday as well. And then last night, I was able to hit the goal of where I'm supposed to be hitting on Wednesday nights. So Wednesday night was a good night. Tonight, we're taking some friends to the airport. But I normally only have about 500 words on Thursday night scheduled, so we'll see how that goes. And then this weekend, we're having a young lady come out and stay with us who will be staying with us starting the end of this month. So, you know, there'll be some extra time there that we'll have to spend. But we're having her come over just as a trial of this is what it's like to live here. And we've already told her, you know, it's pretty quiet around our house, and Ned has stuff to do, and I have stuff to do, and, you know, so we pretty much just do our stuff. So it might be a good weekend, because I think I might be able to actually get to 10,000 words this week if I put down about 3,000 words a piece on Friday and Saturday, which is doable. I just have to book. You know, I just have to make it happen. So I need to get up tomorrow, need to get grocery shopping done, need to get home, need to start writing. Because 3,000 words at my present clip it's about 500 words an hour, which isn't too bad. So that's about 6 hours. So theoretically, if I can be writing by 11 or so, and I can really plow into it, I can get that done by about 5 o'clock. And then Saturday, of course, I can get started earlier than that. Maybe I do have a breakfast this Saturday. No, I don't. This will be the first Saturday, because Saturday will be the 6th. So I have a breakfast next Saturday, but not this Saturday. So I've got all day Saturday. So I can plow for that too. And I've got the 1,500 words that I banked last Sunday. So we'll see. I have been over enough that I'm actually beyond my average for 10,000 words a week, because this will be the end of the fourth week of writing, and I've already put down more than 40,000 words. So, you know, I'm good one way or another, but there certainly would be nothing wrong with getting the book roughed in early. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Theoretically, I'm only about 30,000 words away from finishing this book. Theoretically. I have a major plot line to finish up. And then I have what should be a fairly small plot line to finish up. And then there's another little smaller plot line to finish up. And then I already know I've got a news and information section that's, you know, 12, 14 pages. Those usually go pretty fast, though. I can hammer those down fast. And then I have another little plot line to finish up. And then I have the epilogue to do. The epilogues are the big challenge, because that's where I try to make people cry. So I think I know what will work for the epilogue, I think, but you never know till it's on the page. So you figure I've got 30,000 more words to do. In that 30,000 words, that actually wraps out to about 100 pages, the way things lay out. There's going to be about 14 pages in the epilogue, somewhere in there. There's going to be about 14 pages in the last chapter, and the next to the last chapter. And then maybe I have one more chapter beyond the current. No, two more chapters. So I basically have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more chapters, about 14 pages apiece. Theoretically, that's about 70 pages, so I could go 6 more chapters. Yeah, maybe 6 more chapters. We'll see. It's always a little tricky. It's always a little tricky trying to calculate how many, you know, how many crises, how many balls in the air you got to get going. Although, yeah, it's really 6 more. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 more. Anyways, it's going. We'll see. Got a nice thing happened today. One of my beta readers said, "So when's the next book out?" And he said, "August, right?" Or he said, "October, right?" And I said, "Yeah, I think October." He said, "Good, because I need something good to read. Take my mind off things." Okay, so I took that to mean that he thinks my books are good to read. So, yay. So, anyways, last week I was going to talk about this because my godson had sent me a link to a podcast with Elizabeth Gilbert. He knows that I like Elizabeth Gilbert. She did a TED Talk on genius. That's a lot of fun. Really interesting perspective. Fits within my whole framework of flesh and spirit and the spirit of God communicating with our spirits and all that sort of thing. Fits easily within that if you just change a few words here and there. So, of course, that means I like it. But she had done this podcast because she has a new book coming out now. And so she's always interesting to listen to. She has an interesting perspective because it's not necessarily religious perspective per se, but you can translate the language that she uses very easily into my framework within the Christian mindset. And so I found that to be true here as well. She was on the On Being podcast. And it was pretty interesting. The name of her new book that's coming out is Magic: Creative Living Beyond Fear, which of course we recognize that fear word. That's a trigger word for us because there are two great poles of deception, lust and fear. Two great poles of destruction in our life, lust and fear. And Elizabeth Gilbert is trying to address this issue of fear. And I'm always interested when women are talking about addressing the issue of fear. What's interesting about Elizabeth Gilbert, as the moderator said, beginning with, is that Elizabeth Gilbert has reflected deeply on the gift and challenge of creativity. And she goes on to talk to Elizabeth Gilbert how her story has been fascinating because she had this enormous, unbelievable success with Eat, Pray, Love. And Eat, Pray, Love was supposed to be just some other little book that she put together, and then it got on the Oprah Book Club, and then it just exploded. It was everywhere. And then, of course, you have to decide how you're going to go on after that, because chances are, she won't have a book again that is that successful. Chances are. It's just the way it is. But she has found a path back to doing writing because she enjoys writing, and found a path for dealing with that kind of fame all of a sudden and then moving on from there. And she has an interesting way of addressing her life. She really doesn't talk about following your passion. She thinks that passion is a little too strong of a word. She likes, instead of that, to choose curiosity over fear. And I think that's a nice analogy. Curiosity. And she describes curiosity as our friend that teaches us how to become ourselves. She says it's a very gentle friend, a very forgiving friend, and a very constant one. Passion is not so constant, not so gentle, not so forgiving, and sometimes not so available. So when we live in a world that has come to fetishize passion above all, there's a great deal of pressure around that. And when I read that type of thing, my first reaction is, well, when you're talking about curiosity, in my little framework, what you're really talking about is the whispers of the Spirit. And the whispers of the Holy Spirit very much qualify in this. I could just put the Holy Spirit in that, and I can quote her exactly and just replace out curiosity. I think the Holy Spirit is our friend who teaches us how to become ourselves. He is a very gentle friend, a very forgiving friend, and a very constant one. I mean, it just maps right in beautifully. Her idea, though, is this following of the curiosity that's available to us is really magic. It's a deep magic, and I actually very much think that that is true. And if she wants to call it curiosity, I don't think the Holy Spirit minds that. I don't think the Holy Spirit minds anything that gets us listening. She talks about the responses of people saying that creativity and curiosity belong to a very special class of people. And she's very much against that notion. She says, you get these people saying, oh, I'm not, I can't. And the moderator said, right, or I'm not a Lego master, so I won't even try. And she brought up some really good points that children are born with this innate sense of curiosity and this innate sense that moves them to do things or creative. You just put a coloring book in front of them and crayons and they just take off. Are they Rembrandts? No. Are they exploring? Whoops, sorry, I got a little too far off the road. Are they exploring their creativity? Yes. So what happens? And what Elizabeth Gilbert says, if you talk to people who say they're not creative, that what you find is that was knocked out of them at some point. She says, I think we find most often what happens is that most people I talk to can usually pinpoint with quite specific accuracy moments in their lives where certain artistic expressions were suddenly taken away for them. Where they were informed that they were not a good singer, or they couldn't dance, or they couldn't draw. And she also talks about the pressure that is put on the anointed ones, you know, the ones that can, and they say, oh, you're special, you're the one, now go deliver our artistic dreams to us that no one else is allowed to do. And of course, that puts a lot of pressure on artists. And she said, this creativity, this curiosity becomes something that is not a part of you and not a part of your daily life. It is not embroidered within you. It is not natural to you. It's some artificial thing. And she wants to move out of that and have us realize that creativity is involved for us all. And she did say some interesting things. She said, we're looking at creativity in a very new way. And she said, I mean post-enlightenment, last couple of hundred years, and very Western. She said, I would also say in a very macho way, because it comes with this grandiosity that's on the individual and this pressure to be great and to be genius, and it's strange. She said, but, you know, the creativity that she's talking about, the curiosity that she's talking about is not something that, quote, sets your head on fire. She said, it might not change your life. It might not change your world. It might not even line up with previous things that you've done or been interested in. It may seem very random and make no sense. And I think the reason people end up not following their creativity or curiosity is because they're waiting for a bigger sign. And your curiosities sometimes are so mild and so strange and so almost nothing. It's a little trail of breadcrumbs that you can overlook if you're up on the mountaintop waiting for Moses to come down and give you a sign from God. And I think that is very, very true as well. You know, I've had plenty of people say, well, I've never heard God speak to me like you say he speaks to you. I'd really like to hear that. Well, the fact of it is, it's very soft. And sometimes you don't even realize it's God, and then something goes by, and you act on that, and you look back and go, wait a minute, that worked out extraordinarily well. I mean, I was listening to a guy talking about connecting the dots, and this may be part of the podcast next week. Just a second, I need to wave to my friend if she's looking. She's looking. That is the daughter of our neighbor next door. Sweet, sweet young lady. So, I was listening to this podcast, and it was talking about happiness. And it was interesting because the guy made the statement. He said, you know, after you've got a lot of years down the road, you look back and you go, wait a minute, look at that, look at that, look at how those dots connect. And he said, we need to have an understanding in our lives that maybe we're not going to be, well, he said explicitly, we're not going to be able to connect the dots until later. So quit trying to do that. And I thought to myself, you know, that's not really true. Because there have been things in my life that I connected the dots way ahead of time. I mean, one moment, I'm backing into my garage. There was a situation with my son-in-law that as soon as he was brought on at Praise Assembly as the interim children's pastor, you know, I knew exactly where that was going. And we're talking years and years ahead of time. And he is now the lead pastor at Praise Assembly. And at one point, when my daughter and son-in-law were sending out resumes and they weren't getting anything back and they weren't getting anything back and they were kind of getting a little discouraged, this was years and years and years ago, and I just looked at her and smiled, and she knows that smile, and she said, what? And I said, oh, Lizzie, can you not see this coming? But that is what the voice of the Spirit can do for us. Are we always going to hear right? No, we're not always going to hear right. But that's okay. You can live in that tension of, well, I thought that was the Spirit, but maybe that was just me. There is another interesting idea that she has in here. And the idea that she has in here is that ideas have a life of their own. Now, she gives them this non-corporeal life of its own, and she goes on to describe, and the podcast is worth listening to, On Being, Elizabeth Gilbert. Just look that and you'll find it. She goes on to try to find some way to describe all of this, and she ends up talking about the fact that she believes that ideas exist in the world and that they have their own existence, which is an interesting way of putting it. I mean, she has had certain experiences in her life, and she's trying to find some framework to put these in because they don't fit within the materialistic framework. I've stopped my car, and so it is warming up the car, so I'm rolling down the windows. It doesn't fit within a materialistic framework, and so she's coming up with other language, and the language that she uses... Ah, I can't find it. Anyways, she talks about the fact that that ideas have their own existence and they are apart from us. And she gives an example of this that is really fun. And I find this not surprising at all. And I find it not surprising that the Holy Spirit might be involved in this kind of thing, because I'm firmly convinced that the Holy Spirit is behind this whole push for creativity. And I can't tell you how many people, for instance, when I was doing the Nitpicker's Guides, and after the first one was published, and I would go to Star Trek conventions, I had so many people come up and say, man, I had this exact same idea, and I just didn't do anything with it. Yep. So Elizabeth Gilbert tells this really interesting story. She says, I had an idea for a novel, and it was to be about a, she said, I'll summarize it quickly, a middle-aged spinster from Minnesota who had been working for the same company for 25 years, was quietly in love with her married boss, who sort of was invisible to him. He gets involved in a very ill-advised scheme down in the Amazon jungle and sends a bunch of money and a person down there, and the money and the person disappear, and then he sends her down there to figure out what happens, at which point her orderly life is flipped upside down and into chaos. Okay, so said it's also a love story. She said, I wrote the proposal. I got a book advance for it. I started working on it. I was doing some research for it. And then I got waylaid by some other things that were going on in my life, and I ended up writing a completely different book. I left it aside. And when I came back to it years later, I found that the life force energy, for lack of a better term, the spirit of that book was no longer there. Okay, so the book's gone. Around that same time, I made friend with the novelist Ann Pratchett. We had this very dynamic and exciting meeting where we sort of admitted that we loved each other's work, and she gave me a big kiss right on the lips, and we became pen pals, and we started writing letters to each other. And about a month later, she wrote me a letter saying she had just started working on a book about the Amazon jungle. And I told her, well, that's so strange. I've been working on one too, but it's gone. Then a few months later, we met, and she said, tell me what your Amazon book was about. And she was now 100 pages into hers, and in her book, which, of course, became the extraordinary novel State of Wonder. I haven't read it, but extraordinary, I'm sure. Was a book about a middle-aged spinster from Minnesota who'd been working for a company for 25 years and been quietly in love with a married boy to whom she was invisible. And she said it was exactly the same story. She said, and when we did that thing that pregnant women do when they count backwards to figure out when conception occurs, right? So we did the math, and it was really at the same time when I had lost mine that she had gotten hers. Now, you know, is that possible? Sure, it's possible if you've got the Holy Spirit working behind things. Especially if the Holy Spirit wants to have a little, I call them Jesus giggles, wants to have a little Jesus giggle. And, you know, is just waiting for these two people to get together and start comparing notes. Sure, the Holy Spirit can do that. So the takeaway from all of this is I believe that God is speaking to people all the time, that he's speaking to everyone. And if we'll just tune ourselves into it, it can be amazing. We're not all going to do the same things, but we can have really a wonderful life filled with curiosity. My wife's pulling into the car. I'm a garage. I'm waving to her. We can really have a wonderful life filled with curiosity. But I think it's more than curiosity. I think it's the Holy Spirit at work within us. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.